In 1953, Iowa had 4,558 school districts. Now there are 336. There are many reasons for schools to consolidate, but it's almost always a painful process. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The new documentary, Lost Schools, follows two Iowa communities as they wrestle with school consolidation in rural Iowa. We see the impact of these changes on the students, the teachers, and the communities. This hour, I'll talk with Jason Clayworth of the Des Moines Register and Charlie Litchfield, who co-produced the documentary. I'll also talk with Greg Cruikshank, shared superintendent of Sydney and South Page Schools. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The new documentary, Lost Schools, follows two Iowa communities as they wrestle with school consolidation in rural Iowa. And this is an issue that many Iowa communities have had to deal with through the years. Iowa has lost more than 4,200 school districts over the last 60 years. We also want to hear from you this hour. Has your community gone through a school consolidation? We'd love for you to call us and tell us your story, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before I introduce our guests today, here's a moment from the documentary Lost Schools. These are the voices of Rob and Lorna Scott, whose children are part of the Southeast Valley District.
Small schools in the state of Iowa are really struggling, and it just come to a point where we had too many teachers trying to do too many duties, and the students were the ones that were starting to suffer, and it was being very evident that you couldn't continue to cut programs. We had cut as much as we could, and we had to come up with another option, and whole grade sharing to me was that option.
Holy bucket. Smile pretty. Go up there.
You know, it's a shame. It's a shame that you have to do those things. It would be great if we could rewind 40 years when every small town had a grocery store and a gas station and a high school. That'd be great. But we can't go back to that at this point. All you have to do is look at the great, you know, influx into Waukee and areas like that. People want to be in urban areas. That's where the jobs are. That's where opportunities and things are. Those of us who choose to live out here, you know, we're making the best of it.
That's a moment from the new documentary, Lost Schools. And with me now, Jason Clayworth. He's an investigative reporter for the Des Moines Register, and he and Charlie Litchfield co-produced this documentary. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Charity. Thank you for having us on.
And hello, Charlie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you both so much for being here today. And Jason, let me start with you. This project did not originate with an idea to do a project about rural school consolidation. Where did the idea come from?
It was generated after literally decades of our staffers going town to town for other stories for the Des Moines Register and seeing rural rot. And it's kind of a term that's used to describe what's happening in rural areas as the demographics change. In recent years, Charlie and I were discussing this, and we're scratching our heads about how to tell the story of these towns drying up. And one of the key factors that each of these communities seem to have is that they have a school district that's either closed or is struggling to survive. And so we chose to tell the story through the lens of Iowa school districts.
Was there a moment, either one of you, and Charlie, you can tell me too, when you realized that it really had to be about the schools?
Well, I think that was something that both Jason and I discovered as we were out on an assignment together, and you just sort of started to pick up that the theme that sort of wove all these small towns together was that they all shared some form of struggle with their, you know, maintaining their school district. It was the most common theme that you saw across the state. So,
you know, one of the feelings that I get as I go through these towns is that for me, I see these vacant homes and these vacant businesses, and I realize that each one of them is somebody's dream. And so I felt that telling this story through, you know, not only print, but also in a documentary was appropriate to help people understand the magnitude of what's happened throughout the entire state and to be quite honest, throughout the entire nation. This is not something that is unique in Iowa, but Iowa is affected particularly hard.
Well, and tell me a little bit about the communities that you chose to profile, because you picked a moment in time in two different rural communities where things were changing really rapidly.
Yeah, the consolidation theme, actually, we had, I guess just to back up, the two communities that we picked, one was Corwith, Iowa, which is in kind of far north central Iowa, and they were actually closing their school district, the Corwith-Wesley-Laverne School District, after many, many years. The school building that they actually shuttered had been there for almost 100 years. The other community that we followed was the newly formed Southeast Valley High School, which is in Gowrie. And that was actually a consolidate or a whole grade sharing agreement between the Prairie Valley School District, and which was based in Gowrie, the high school was, and then also the Southeast Webster Grand District, which was sort of was spread out between the communities of Dayton and Pilot Mound and in that area.
Well, and for people who aren't familiar with this, who haven't gone through all of the public meetings and all of the things that lead up to a school consolidation, explain what you mean by whole grade sharing.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing for Jason to pick up on.
Okay.
Various districts throughout the state try to do take different options to try to survive. And so what Prairie Valley and Southeast Webster Grand decided to do was to share their entire middle schools and their entire high schools. So now you have two rival districts that, you know, for decades and decades, they played each other in sports. Now they are a team. They're all part of one. So your middle school, all your students go to one building, and your high school, all your students go to one building. The districts are still there, but they are changed drastically.
And as you went through this process of watching the students get together, the schools make these changes, what were you hoping to find? What were you hoping to show?
It was the raw emotion. And not only that, but also what happens to a community, what happens to the students, what happens to the parents. And so we tracked the progress throughout an entire year to do that. And you see that in the documentary. You see a school board member break down. You see parents crying. But you also see moments of joy. You see the students adapt very, very well. One of the things I took away from this is that it really is it seemed to be harder, at least for adults, and that's one of the points that some of our sources make as well.
Right, that was very striking. There were some kids who were sad about changes. There were kids who were excited about the changes, but all in all, the kids seemed to deal with the changes really well, whereas the adults were having a really hard time.
Exactly.
Yeah, there were a lot of themes that kept coming up over and over again, and that was certainly a big one. The parents that we talked to oftentimes were very emotional and with good reason. I mean, for a lot of them, this is their heritage, you know, and for the students, maybe some of them don't have that same kind of connection, and kids are adaptable, kids adjust to things. So that was not necessarily something that I anticipated going into it. But
I think for adults, they saw this as something bigger. So I think for the adults that we spoke with, they see this as, the dying of their community, something that's really drastic. Not all of them, but many did. And to them, it's very sad.
So for the students, in a lot of cases, it seemed to be kind of exciting. You're going to a new school, you're meeting new people, in some cases, a real increase in opportunities as far as taking other classes or getting to participate in jazz band or, you know, making sure you have access to foreign language education, that kind of thing. There really seemed to be a sense of excitement among some of the students.
And that's a key argument for folks that are that advocate for merging or whole grade sharing or other options, because students all of a sudden have all these different options and that they can select for classes and extracurricular activities. And so, you know, this isn't all doom and gloom. There are some, you know, some good points, some interesting points that come with this that some people embrace.
You mentioned how this was inspired by some of the rural blight that you saw traveling around the state, and many other Des Moines Register reporters also saw traveling around the state. And many communities have that empty school building, or even more than one, sitting in the middle of their community that's not being used for anything, that's slowly decaying. And these schools used to be real community centers, the place where people met and made friends, the places where people got together and did fundraisers and went to sporting events and really were part of their community in so many ways. When you look at the economic effects of a small school district closing or a town losing their schools, what are some of the ripple effects that you did see?
High schools particularly, all schools, but high schools particularly, have a big economic impact on communities. And, you know, what you see is that once a school closes, you don't have the staff. In many of these towns that we're talking about, the school is the largest employer. And so when a school closes, you don't have those salaries, those jobs, and people move away. More people move away. And so, you know, if you go back to some of these communities where their school has closed, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years ago, you can see what happens. And, you know, there's a little town near where I grew up where we went and visited, a town called Udell. And its school closed, I believe, in the 1960s. It's been many decades ago. And really all that's left there are a few homes. And so it gives you an idea of what happens after, you know, you lose a school.
Do you have anything that you want to add to that, Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, when we kind of circle back to these themes, that was one of them. You see that, you know, we talked to an economist at Iowa State, Dave Swenson, who had actually said that, you know, the biggest story in Iowa is this, like, continued and persistent out-migration of families from rural space, and that's really what you're seeing. And I think the economic implications of that are pretty obvious when you drive through, you know, the Pilot Mounds and these small towns that once, you know, you could kind of see the semblance of what used to be a community and how very little remains. And, you know, from my perspective, it was just it was kind of a hard thing to see, you know, because you know that there are some towns that are growing, but some towns that are just really struggling to hang on.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Jason Clayworth. He's an investigative reporter for the Des Moines Register, and he and Charlie Litchfield co-produced the new documentary, Lost Schools. We'll continue our conversation about school consolidation in a moment, and the documentary will premiere at the Varsity Theater in Des Moines on October 18th. It will also premiere on Iowa Public Television on October 22nd at 7 p.m. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about rural school consolidation in Iowa. The new documentary, Lost Schools, follows two Iowa communities as they wrestle with school consolidation. And with me today, Jason Clayworth. He's an investigative reporter for the Des Moines Register. Also, Charlie Litchfield. They co-produced this documentary. We also want to hear from you this hour. Has your community gone through a school consolidation? Tell us your story. What are the downsides? What are the positives? What did you learn from the experience? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Coming up in just a few minutes, Greg Cruikshank is going to be joining us. He's the shared superintendent of Sydney and South Page schools and also part of the Rural School Advocates of Iowa. And he was also a part of this documentary. And I want to share a little bit of what he said in the documentary that sheds some light on how our rural areas are changing.
Rural schools do not have to close, but we really got to be smart. We got to be different about how we do things. We're like the one-room schoolhouse of the 21st century. I think it's a function of what's happened with the economic vitality of our rural areas and the population dearth that's happened with the changing dynamic of the ag economy too. In the College Springs School District, you cannot buy a gallon of gas or a gallon of milk. And it's a pretty good sized school district geographically. So that tells you something right there. And I would guess 50 years ago, probably all those towns had a grocery store, had a gas station, had a hardware station. Somebody selling seed on Main Street. It's gone away.
That's just a moment from the new documentary, Lost Schools. And Jason and Charlie, that line from Greg there, you can't buy a gallon of gas or a gallon of milk in an entire school district. I think that sheds so much light on how our rural areas have changed. Jason, when you look at so many of the changes that have taken place over the last 60 years or so, what do you see in these communities?
Well, it's absolutely startling when you stop and think about and look at what's happened, because it happens. It seems like it happens so slowly. And you see, you know, you wake up one day and you realize that you can't buy a gallon of gas or milk in your community. It's sad to see that happen. But it's, again, it's not something that's unique in Iowa. And, you know, really this is associated with some massive demographic changes. You know, when Iowa plotted school districts in the 1800s, they set a school roughly every two miles so that children could walk, because that was the mode of transportation. But with the advent of vehicles and modern transportation, that wasn't necessary. And so, you know, over time, we've lost, you know, more than 4,300 school districts in the state of Iowa just since 1950. And so that's what happens. You know, you have bigger farms, you have fewer people on those farms because of you know, the developments of technology. People are moving to urban areas, and more and more rural districts are becoming desolate.
Well, and you share some statistics throughout the documentary that shed light on how our rural economy has changed, how farms have changed. I mean, there was a time when you would drive through a rural area and there would be a farmstead that was inhabited every mile or two. And now, especially in Western Iowa, you just don't see that, do you?
You don't. No. You know, farms are scattered far greater. You can go 2, 3, 4 miles sometimes and you don't see an actual, you know, homestead. You might see some vacant homes. I mean, depending on where you're at, it can be a very desolated area. And there are counties in Iowa that, you know, have fewer than 3,000 people. I mean, so to think of that, you know,
peak population like the early 1900s, you know, so that kind of gives you some perspective, you know.
Well, repeat that again, Charlie.
Just a lot of these counties, you know, these really rural counties, reached their peak population in the early 1900s, 1920, something like that. And so, I mean, as you go out and you see that, you know, that's kind of when you circle back to the fact that, you know, this wasn't just a story about education. This is a story about rural Iowa the social fabric of Iowa and how that's changing. You know, as Greg said in that quote, you know, agriculture plays a big part of that. Every year, farmers are trying to get more and more efficient, and those efficiencies lead to changes in the dynamic of the population. So.
How large were some of the districts that you looked at as you were doing research for this documentary?
Well, Sydney, actually the district, and Greg could probably talk more accurately about that, but it's huge. I mean, it covers several counties. I think Jason could probably tell you the largest district or one of the largest, but I know that Southeast Valley, I mean, there when they combined, that geographic area is pretty enormous. And most of these roads, I mean, something to consider is a lot of these roads that buses are traveling down, these are gravel roads, and that cost of transportation for students.
There are some districts that have 200 to 300 square miles in their districts.
Wow.
And so there's a state law that prohibits children from riding on buses. I believe that it's in our documentary, but I believe it's an hour and 15 minutes for high school students and an hour for elementary. And so these districts, some districts, particularly in the northern part of the state, are up against the demographics of transportation. So, you know, we talked with a few districts that said they couldn't consolidate anymore without breaking that law. And so they've had, you know, they have their bus routes. They're very strategic in how they plan their bus routes so that they work within that time frame of, that the law requires. But they said to us that this is it. You know, we can't do any more without either changes to that law or breaking a law.
I'm talking with Jason Clayworth and Charlie Litchfield, who co-produced the new documentary, Lost Schools. You are welcome to join the conversation this hour, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Ed is on the line from Martinsdale. Hi, Ed.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
The great school that I went to school with is closed now, and one of the things that seems to impact that is I worked as a lobbyist in Des Moines Capital, and I don't remember any representatives of small towns and rural communities writing much law in Iowa for economic development purposes. And I do recall one business getting almost $500 million. That'd be 10 $1 million incentive packages for every county in Iowa. So I think, you know, it may not be a big mystery here.
Well, Jason or Charlie, do you want to respond to what
Ed's
saying?
Yeah, I'll pick that up. I think that's an excellent point. And that, you know, some of the folks that we speak with in the documentary, some legislators kind of touch on that a little bit. You know, what do you do to save these schools? And that's the big question: is this, does the state continue to shell out money to keep these schools running? Do you give them the option of raising taxes? So that, you know, right now Iowa has a law in place that limits the amount of taxes that a school district can charge, and so that has been part of the large part of the financial pressures that these districts face, because they can't just – it's not as simple as just raising taxes. They have restraints. And so those are big, big questions that have been raised. And, you know, some rural legislators have talked about, you know, various incentive packages. But how does that work? It's very complicated because, you know, the demographics continue to change and work against some of these rural areas. It's not an easy solution. And, you know, members of both parties are quite concerned about this on numerous levels. But as of yet, not a whole lot's been done to be able to stop the erosion of the number of districts throughout the state.
Well, and Ed, given your experience, I mean, how do you place value on a rural school? What we've talked about what it means to the community as an employer, but also, when you look at the educational opportunities for students, as the school's resources dwindle, as the size dwindles, as you can only hire so many teachers, I mean, how do you place that value?
Right. And you've got the value of the diversity that is included when you have a diverse educational system, too. You don't have all your eggs in one basket. I think there's something to be said for that. But I'd like to get back to the idea that, you know, something like campaign finance reform, getting the money out of politics, and then we get more legislation written for real people in rural areas, I think, instead of just for special interest corporations. I think it's a huge deal.
Well, Ed, thank you so much for sharing your perspective with us today. You can join the conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I want to bring Greg Cruikshank into the conversation. He is shared superintendent of Sydney and South Page Schools. He's also secretary treasurer for the Rural School Advocates of Iowa. Hello, Greg.
Good morning.
Oh, thank you so much for being here today.
Good morning, Charlie.
Hey, thank you.
Good morning, Jason.
How are you guys doing?
Greg.
Well, glad that you're here today.
Well, Greg, I want to ask you, we played a clip from the documentary where you were talking about how these rural districts have changed so dramatically and how these small towns have changed. But you started that clip by saying rural schools don't have to close. Why do you believe that's true?
Well, I think what we have to do is leaders, as at least the board, superintendents, administrators, we've got to be willing to adapt and adjust. You know, probably the example for the South Page School District is probably the poster child for rural population blight in Iowa. 1960, that district was consolidated, five small communities in southern Page County. had 640 students, K-12, and today we just counted our numbers served, our guest numbers served for this school year, and it's 111.
Wow.
K-12. So we've lost 85% of our population. At the same time, as far as from a financial viability standpoint, in the single biggest gauge of financial viability in the state of Iowa is what's called the unspent authorized budget, and that district right now has a little over $500,000 in unspent budget authority, which from a pure financial standpoint at least keeps us viable, somewhat stable, and gives our board time to make decisions. Well, what we've done as a district is we share. You know, what you learned in kindergarten applies right now in the 21st century in small rural schools in Iowa. As small districts, we have to share, we have to collaborate, we have to work together. South Page, Sydney are part of the Corner Conference, 2,300 students total amongst those eight schools with seven high school programs, Hamburg and Farragut being whole grade shared. And South Page has 20 different sharing agreements with five other schools in the Corner Conference, Clarinda Lutheran, Clarinda Public, and a school district in Missouri as well. And so you've got to kind of follow the money. You've got to follow where the funding is. You've got to be willing to collaborate. You've got to use technology as an efficient use for human resources. And if all those things are put in place, then you do have the opportunity to not only thrive as a rural district, but survive. Or, excuse me, not only just survive, but thrive as a rural school district.
When you look at the opportunities that the students have today with the, you know, whole grade sharing, those kinds of approaches, do you feel like education is improving for students in these rural areas?
Well, I think, if, you know, South Page would be, and Sydney would also be a very good example. You know, we've been able to increase our CTE offerings. You know, a few years ago, South Page did not have a welding program. Now they have a welding program.
So that's technical programs, is CT?
Yes, career technical education. Yeah, thanks for, we got to get out of Ed speak sometimes,
right?
and clarify that. Exactly. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a automotives program. Nishnabotna, Farragut's had an automotives program for years. And we have four or five school districts that participate in that automotives program and actually have it two periods a day at South Page. You know, we've got Spanish teachers are rare, quality Spanish teachers. Well, we have a program using IP video, one-to-one digital device program, where Sydney owns a Spanish teacher and shares that through IP video. And since all schools have one-to-one digital device programs, shares that program with Essex, Nishnabotna, and South Page.
So
and
the so students don't necessarily have to travel to take advantage of some of the educational opportunities. You're using technology to connect them.
Technology and then teachers traveling from two sites. And so instead of having students move, teachers move. For example, with Essex at South Page, we share some CTE programs, and those teachers move back and forth. And so there was a fundamental change starting in 2004 as far as the phase out of the budget guarantee, which basically gave school districts some certainty as far as funding, whether or not they had declining enrollment. And as that began to be phased out, a couple things began to be phased in. And one of them was, you know, more emphasis on sharing and providing emphasis on sharing, whether it be teachers, whether it be operational functions such as superintendents, business managers, maintenance directors, even extracurricular programs that have been around for a long time. But that sharing and the fact that in the Southwest Iowa we have seven school districts who have that in common and have that need to share with each other, that's been huge as far as us being viable, surviving, and like I said, thriving and actually providing more opportunities for kids.
Now, I know that most people get into teaching because they want to connect with students, they want to make a difference in students' lives. As a teacher who is going to be teaching some students through one-on-one digital technology, who is going to be traveling during the day, driving to community, are you having a hard time recruiting teachers to come to these rural areas?
You know, the recruitment situation doesn't necessarily center around that. I'll give you a perfect. It centers more around getting them adjusted, just doing things differently. Because what we do is we try to provide incentives. We negotiate through master contracts. If you're a shared teacher, you'll get an extra stipend. The perfect example is our Spanish teacher, and we started doing this at Sydney 7 or 8 years ago, sharing our teacher using ICN technology at that time and now IP video technology. And that is set up, and people will kind of go, oh, really? But that is set up so that right now with that teacher, because the way it's structured in our master contract, that teacher is making $85,000 this year to teach Spanish to 4 schools. And people will say, well, geez, that's unheard of and that's uncalled for. But when you break it out, this teacher has a master's degree in Spanish. They are bilingual in that they were a native of Mexico, and Spanish teachers are hard to find. And so when you cost it out for those 4 districts, it works very well for all 4 districts, but yet it's a little bit different. Look at how you compensate a teacher in a hard-to-find area to get them to teach there.
So there may be opportunities for teachers that there aren't in other places. We're going to take a short break. Yep. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about rural school consolidation. With me this hour, Greg Cruikshank. He is the shared superintendent of Sydney and South Page Schools, also secretary treasurer for the Rural School Advocates of Iowa. Jason Clayworth and Charlie Litchfield are also here with me. They're co-producers of the new documentary, Lost Schools, which premieres a little later this month. You can have an opportunity to watch the documentary on Iowa Public Television on October 22nd. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. We're listening to some of the music from the documentary written by Iowa musician Chad Elliott.
Rose above a sea of corn, paint chipped and the step well worn, walls never seemed too small, gave us hope. Taught us all. Ooh.
Ooh. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about rural school consolidation in Iowa, a conversation inspired by the new documentary, Lost Schools. It will premiere at the Varsity Theater in Des Moines on October 18th. Also, it will premiere on Iowa Public Television on October 22nd at 7 p.m., so it will show across the state. With me this hour, I have the co-producers of the documentary, Charlie Litchfield and Jason Clayworth, who's also an investigative reporter for the Des Moines Register. And Greg Cruikshank is here, shared superintendent of Sydney and South Page Schools, secretary treasurer for the Rural School Advocates of Iowa. We also want to hear from you with your experiences. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jay is on the line from Rockwell City. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how are you?
Great. What would you like to talk about?
Well, it's just the topic is very good for rural Iowa, especially since the side call-in, since I've kind of been on all aspects of it as far as going through consolidation as a student. And also I had a son that went through the consolidation, and I currently work at a school district that's went through consolidation.
Wow. So you've been an employee, a student, and a parent in all of these different scenarios. When you were a kid, what did it mean to you?
Well, like I said, as a kid, it was, you know, excitement because you got to meet new people. You got to go to a different school. You know, back when it was not that old, but you didn't travel that far, but you got to just meet new people, see different kids, how other kids were, just expand your base of people you knew as a child. So it was exciting. It really wasn't that big of a deal to me back then. But then as you transfer, like say, into a parent, and you went to the high school that your kid is going to right at the moment, but then, you know, that's going to go into, you know, a transition, and currently they're South Central Calhoun. So then you're not upset. You're just kind of sad because, yeah, you're losing your identity. You wanted your kid to be there and go through that same thing that you did, but that all changes.
Right.
And then as a employee of a school district, you know, I'm a custodian, so the building you take care of, you take pride in it, and then when it gets closed, you know, it's just kind of sad because you know how good the building is, but yet you know the money's not there, the kids aren't there to justify having that building, so, well, you just have to close it. And currently this summer, I went through closing the second building that I've, you know, had to close as being a custodian. So it's just kind of sad throughout the whole deal.
And Jay, I'm curious, as a parent, you felt sad and a loss of identity, as your son wasn't going to be going to the same high school that you did. After you kind of got through that emotional part of it, how did you feel about your son's education and his opportunities?
Well, I think the school district tried really hard not to make any major changes at that time. So pretty much all the classes, the district wasn't that far spread out at the time. So a lot of the teachers and the classes were kind of all the same. So I really wasn't that worried about it. It's more or less, like you say, I don't know how to explain it. It's more or less like an image deal, I guess, for the parent. They've been, you know, you were at this school, and now that image is going to change, and that image is going to be gone, and what that school was. It's just different, I'd say. I really wasn't worried about it. It's more or less a parent thing, I guess.
Well, Jay, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And, I mean, Jason and Charlie, that really echoes a lot of what we see in the documentary, where really the parents are having a hard time. I mean, school spirit is a real thing, and it's part of a community identity, and it's hard for the parents to let go of that.
Absolutely.
That's a huge part of this whole piece. That, I mean, you can sense the feeling of sort of being stuck, you know, that in Jay's voice, you know, the way he talks about it, it's that loss of identity, that sort of rural culture. And in small towns, it means a lot. You know, I mean, I'm from a big town. I actually grew up in Ames, but, you know, I went to the same high school that my father and my grandfather went to. And the idea of losing that identity, it's a really hard thing to kind of confront.
And Charlie, you're from a smaller community, right?
No, I'm actually from Ames.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, but, you know, I mean, it's all relative, I guess. But you know, where Ames is actually situated, you can circle the map around Ames and just about every one of those communities. I mean, you have Collins Maxwell Baxter, Roland Story, Ballard, all these different schools that have consolidated. And so, you know, even in a larger community, one of these population centers like Ames, you're not immune to it. I mean, people you know growing up go to these schools and are encountering these types of struggles of losing their identity. So,
well, and Jason, I reversed your stories. Jason, you grew up in a smaller community.
I did, very, very small, a little town called Moulton, Iowa, south central, southeastern part of the state. And, you know, the school, whenever I graduated 20 years ago, and I was one of 22 students in the class. K through 12 had, I believe it was 365 students. Now it's lost a third of that. And so over a 20-year period. And the school, there are folks in the community that are afraid that the school is going to close. There have been those fears that have happened. Those fears have existed for decades when I was in school. And so for me, this project is very personal. And so I relate very well with our sources. And so, you know, your caller, Jay, I can relate with his raw emotion that he feels both for himself and his community and his child. You know, one of the things that I will mention that we saw and was not a surprise to me, but I remember at one point I asked some of the students at Corwith Wesley, you know, if they ever had gang problems or, you know, if there was an immense amount of bullying or anything intolerable. And they outwardly laughed because there's no such thing. It's like they're so small. They know each other so well. They're like brothers and sisters. And so that there really is a difference between these smaller schools and larger schools in that way. The education and their educational achievement, if you look at the statistics, are very close, very, very close. It's amazing how well these smaller schools can stack up. But the big difference is the finances and their ability to navigate the rough waters of survival.
Well, and to play a devil's advocate here, I mean, we know that in rural districts there can be bullying problems. And sometimes if you're unusual or you don't fit in a rural community, it can be extremely isolating because you do have just a small group of, mm-hmm. of students to connect with. So
that's absolutely true. But we know what we found was that it also was easier to stop.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we just saw that there was this community connection there. And so that's at least what we saw in our work.
Yeah, I think it's just harder to sort of blend in some of these smaller schools, you know. And the school that I went to, I mean, my graduating class was 400. And, it's pretty easy for kids to slip through the cracks, either academically or socially. And I think kind of what we're getting at here, I don't disagree with either point. I think you're both absolutely, you know, correct. But I just think some of the difference is that accountability. I think you see that sort of working differently in large and small schools.
Let's go back to the phones. Josh is on the line in Iowa City. And Josh, you actually went to Prairie High School, which is now Southeast Valley. This is one of the communities profiled in the documentary. How did the experience work for you?
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I guess I went to Prairie when it was still Prairie before Prairie Valley. And then, of course, I graduated in 2001. And since then, it's become Southeast. Nobody knows what it is, Valley, Gowrie, Grandview. I guess one of the interesting parts of my education was is that during our consolidation process, schools were abandoned, and then we built a new school. And that new school in Callander is also now abandoned. And as when I go home to visit my parents, because I no longer live there, it's really sad to see these abandoned school buildings. And I know Jay talked about that just a little bit ago, and I was curious your thoughts about what works for these communities. I mean, there's obviously a psychological impact of seeing these abandoned schools. It's almost like a sign of, I don't want to call it failure, but it's definitely a sad thing to look at. I'm curious what communities do with these facilities, or if there's anything to do with these really expensive pieces of infrastructure to turn them into a positive thing, or if there isn't anything you're seeing.
Well, Josh, thank you so much for bringing that up. And that was something that you looked at.
Absolutely. And we went to Callander, actually, and I believe that school district is now a winery, if I remember correctly. Communities have differing ways of dealing with this. You know, the documentary shows some schools that have been turned into apartments, and there's also some that have been turned into secondhand stores and various businesses like the winery that we speak about. But generally speaking, if you go through the state and take notice of some of these buildings, they're dilapidated, they're falling down, or they're just completely gone. And so, it's not necessarily unique that some of these buildings are saved, but it is not the norm.
And communities are throwing a lot of things out there. And you also profiled the process of trying to decide whether or not the school would be demolished or not, because this was in core with Wesley, because they had to decide, you know, if we don't have a plan for it and it just sits here empty, what is the cost on the community of that? And then will we have the money in the future to demolish it, right?
It was one of the biggest questions in the community, and one the questions that really tugged at the heartstrings of community members. You have, again, a rather relatively close-knit community. Everybody knows each other, but yet you had some really differing views on what should happen. And so that raw emotion is captured, and the very difficult decisions that are made are all part of this documentary and shows what happens to a community as they go through this process.
Yeah, sadly, I mean, you can look around the state and see examples of communities that have done one or the other in those moments. They've decided to either try and hold on to that building and make it work, and because of that sense of pride and loyalty to the building and to the school. But a lot of what you see in the sort of the live portions of the documentary from Corwith is that struggle, because, psychologically, I think just your caller referenced that sense of depression, I guess.
It's just like kind of like an open wound that
absolutely. Right. I mean, you look around communities like Bagley and other areas where there are these old, beautiful buildings. I mean, these were concrete structures with concrete roofs, and these things like were built to stand for hundreds of years. I had a colleague at the register who called them prairie castles, and they're very much that way. I mean, they're gorgeous. They don't build schools like this anymore, and so. Yeah, it's a interesting, struggle.
You know, Charity, we have an interactive website where we've invited readers in this past almost year and a half now that we've been working on this project to contribute their memories and their photos and their videos of these schools. And when we started this process, our database had 2,000 schools. So we were missing, at one point Iowa had 18,000 plus schools. We were missing 16,000 schools, and we're still missing thousands. The state of Iowa had lost track of the names of those schools. And so our readers have helped us provide more than 2,000 school districts to that list. They've added more than 1,500 photos and numerous videos as well, and all kinds of memories. And it's just fascinating to see. But that gives a look at what's happened throughout these communities, because you see pictures of these schools in various parts of decay, and you really get a good sense of what's happened across the entire state.
I want to read an email. This is from Alex. I was a member of the last graduating class from Ventura, Iowa. I had the honor of working with my school board during my senior years. My community began the slow and painful process of whole grade sharing leading up to eventual consolidation. It was a hard experience all around for both students and adults, but the most striking thing I noticed was the intense emotions from the adults in the community who saw this as the end. Our school was such a centralized part of our community and was a large part of our identity. It still pains me to know that the school that was a cornerstone of my development is closed, but it's nice to know that my community lives on in a different way now that we have consolidated. And again, that echoes so many of the emotions in the film. And I want to ask both of you, I mean, this process of school consolidation, the fact that you were able to look at two communities who were going through this right now, and there were more communities in the past year that were struggling with that. There will be more communities struggling with that in the coming year. And then we also had this event this summer where Governor Terry Branstad vetoed $55.7 million in K-12 school funding. Did that force some of these rural schools to make a decision to consolidate?
I don't think that veto itself did, no, but it certainly didn't help matters. I mean, if you talk with educators, they will, the ones that I've talked with have said, no, that, you know, we already have these stresses in place, but that certainly doesn't help. You know, all of these schools are stressed, and so it just adds to the pile of those stresses.
Well, and you show in the documentary a meeting where schools are basically pleading for their futures. I take it that happens every year with districts that are having budget problems.
Yeah, I mean, when we went to that meeting, there was 12 districts that were going before the Budget Review Committee to sort of plead their case. And so the themes that you're seeing in Southeast Valley, you know, these are not unique to them. I mean, there were several other schools that were going through consolidation. I know that the school district in Manning, they were going through a process that was kind of similar. And so, yeah, I mean, this is going to be an ongoing thing. This is not a sort of just jump in and look at what's happening now and jump out. This is going to be an ongoing debate for years, I think.
So when people, we're almost out of time, but when people watch your documentary and they see these stories, what are you hoping they'll take away from this?
I'm hoping that Iowans take another look at what's happening in the rural areas and give it some real thought. And I'm hoping that folks listen to people like Greg Cruikshank and can help save some of these districts because, you know, there's a lot yet that they offer. And so I'm just hoping that Iowa takes another look at this and can possibly, you know, prevent some of these closures in the future and kind of look at the route that they're going. Just take a second look.
Well, Jason, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us. I really appreciate it.
Jason Clayworth is an investigative reporter for the Des Moines Register. He also co-produced this series in the Des Moines Register and the forthcoming documentary, Lost Schools. Charlie Litchfield, thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks for having us.
Charlie Litchfield, also co-producer of the documentary, Lost Schools. The documentary will premiere at the Varsity Theater October 18th. That's in Des Moines. October 18th at 4 p.m. It will also premiere on IPTV on October 22nd at 7 p.m. We also spoke a few moments ago with Greg Cruikshank, shared superintendent of Sydney and South Page Schools and secretary treasurer of the Rural School Advocates of Iowa. And we go out with more original music from Iowa musician Chad Elliott. This is Talk of Iowa.
How did time slip by so fast? All the games we lost won't last, but may the glory days never end. That's not how it goes sometimes. Victory bell won't always chime. Sometimes we must stand in line and wait for life's reason. With the songs from way back in the day.